My name is John Paul Medora. After the 1991 Gulf War, Saddam Hussein's regime survived but remained under heavy UN sanctions. Iraq was required to dismantle its weapons of mass destruction program and submit to international inspections. Over the next decade, relations with the West were a cycle of confrontation, partial cooperation, and defiance. Saddam routinely harassed UN inspectors, leading to sporadic US and British airstrikes. By the early 2000s, Iraq was isolated, impoverished, and heavily monitored. But Washington believed Saddam had preserved or rebuilt stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons. The September 11, 2001 attacks fundamentally changed U.S. foreign policy. President George W. Bush's administration adopted a preemptive defensive posture, an idea that potential threats must be neutralized before they could strike the United States. Though Iraq had no proven link to 9/11, the administration began framing Saddam's regime as the broader axis of evil, which included nations that could supply terrorists with WMDs. By 2002, as diplomatic pressure mounted, Iraq agreed to allow UN inspectors back into the country, but their findings were inconclusive. They didn't find stockpiles, but they couldn't verify total disarmament either. Inside Washington, key officials, including Vice President Cheney and Secretary Rumsfeld, argued that containment had failed, that Saddam's regime would always be a destabilizing force in the region. By January of 2003, the writing was on the wall. The United States had begun positioning forces for an invasion of Iraq. Elements of the 75th Ranger Regiment, including my battalion, the 2nd, were moved into the theater. Officially, we were there for pre-invasion operations. Back then, we thought we understood what we were walking into. We didn't.
Red TOC, this is 1-1. We just had two civilians run in front of our lead vehicle, both struck. Up, happy. Over.
Say again, 1-1.
Affirm, two civilians ran straight into the convoy. Both are down, over.
Copy. Okay, are there any signs of movement?
Stand by. Yeah, one's moving. Hard to tell how. Looks like he's trying to crawl, but Jesus, we hit him hard. I don't know how he's moving. We're in the open and we don't know if they were wearing something. Request permission to continue movement. We can't stay here. Over.
Copy, 1-1, hold for confirmation.
Red TOC Havoc, visual on the scene. Two individuals down in the roadway. One rolling, I guess.
Copy, all 1-1, maintain movement, mission remain to go.
Roger, continuing to objectives.
By February 2003, a Ranger element had been temporarily moved from conventional staging areas in Kuwait and attached to CIA Special Forces units already operating in Kurdistan. This was just north of the Green Line, the boundary that separated Kurdish territory from Ba'ath Party-controlled areas of Iraq. The Green Line was a political demarcation enforced by northern no-fly zones established after the Gulf War. South of it, Saddam's forces still held power. North of it, the Kurdish-controlled government maintained semi-autonomous control under coalition protection. For more than a decade, the Kurds had operated as a quasi-independent state. By early 2003, their territory had become a forward staging ground for U.S. intelligence and special operations. We flew into Erbil on a C-130 in the middle of the night. The CIA and special forces had already been there for months, some of them longer. They'd embedded with Kurdish forces, mapped roads, identified targets, and cultivated contacts inside of Saddam's military. By the time we arrived, they'd already established supply lines, safe houses, and vehicle pools. A week into our stay, eight of us were pulled into the briefing room on the FOB. Two full-bird colonels sat at the front table beside a major I didn't recognize. Next to them was a guy in civilian clothes, khaki pants, a polo shirt, and a Glock on his hip. That was Thomas Bracken of the CIA. He was a 35-year-old guy with blonde hair that was just slightly longer than military regulations at the time. He sat back in his chair like he owned the room. The mission, as described to us, was straightforward on paper. Bracken had cultivated a contact inside the Iraqi military, a colonel named Karim al-Assad, who commanded an armored brigade, and more importantly, held influence over several garrison battalions controlling key supply routes near Mosul. If al-Assad's forces stood down, it could prevent urban fighting across major sections of the northern approach and open humanitarian corridors into Baghdad. Our job was simple: get Bracken to the meeting, keep him alive, and get him out. We'd move in three Humvees. The lead vehicle would carry our squad leader, Javier Maven, and two other Rangers. The middle vehicle would carry Bracken, an interpreter, and our medic. Rear vehicle would be our quick reaction element, with three Rangers, including myself, and extra comm gear. A little bird would provide overwatch from above, call sign Havoc-2-1. The rules of engagement were clear. Protect the principal. Positive identification required before engaging. Verbal challenge first. Show of force second. Lethal force only if the threat was imminent. Command told us there'd been reports of stray dogs turning aggressive in northern districts. Something local patrols chalked up to starvation or disease. But command made sure to note the ROEs applied to the animals as well. They believed that incidental gunfire in a crowded district risked hostile escalation and must be avoided at all cost. The meeting location was a compound near a market in Mosul, a fortified house that served as al-Assad's local headquarters. Intel said his guards were disciplined, a mix of regular army and tribal fighters. Bracken disagreed with the footprint. He made that clear from the start at the briefing. He'd run several operations in the region already, successful ones, and that track record had given him confidence, possibly too much. He argued that eight Rangers and a little bird overhead would draw too much attention. Al-Assad's compound was in a dense urban area near a market. Three Humvees rolling through would already stand out, and a rotary wing asset circling above, and the whole neighborhood would know something was happening. The meeting was supposed to be discreet, a back-channel negotiation, not a show of force. Bracken suggested a smaller element, 4 or 5 men at most, no air support unless absolutely necessary. He'd done similar meetings before with less security and walked out clean every time, but command didn't agree. The major at the table pointed out that Bracken's previous operations had been in Kurdish-controlled areas, or with local intermediaries who had already vetted the environment. This was different. Al-Assad was a senior Iraqi officer operating inside Ba'ath territory. His loyalty was unconfirmed. His guards were armed and potentially hostile. If the situation went bad, Bracken would need immediate extraction capability, and 4 men wouldn't be enough to establish a secure perimeter and move him out under fire. Bracken didn't argue further, but I could see he wasn't happy about it. I didn't know him well enough to say whether his concern was tactical or ego. Maybe both. What I did know is that he'd built a reputation as someone who could talk his way into most places, and he'd done it without a platoon backing him up. The rest of the briefing stayed tense. The colonels went over comms protocols, rally points, and abort criteria. If Al-Assad's guard showed any signs of preparing an ambush, unusual movements, weapons repositioning, locking exits, we pulled rec and immediately. If local crowds gathered or became hostile, same thing. The little bird would stay at altitude unless we called for close support. And even then, weapons-free authorization had to come from higher up. The briefing wrapped 20 minutes later. We'd roll at 0500.
Red TOC 11 on site. Compound gate is closed. I repeat, compound gate is closed. No visual on guards. Over.
Copy 11. You're early by 3 mics. Hold position and maintain over once.
Red TOC Havoc. I've got eyes on the compound. No movement inside the courtyard. Looks empty.
Copy that. We're pretty exposed sitting out here.
Understood. Hold one.
Negative TOC. Local is starting to stir. We got to make a call now.
Stand by 11.
Gate is moving.
Side. You're moving forward, keeping guns down unless this goes sideways.
Solid copy. Park that last Humvee in between the gates so they can't close.
We're in, dismounting now.
Copy, 1-1. Good luck in there.
From the FOB started in the darkness of the early morning. Once we were onto the main road heading south, our lead vehicle maintained interval ahead of us. About 10 minutes into that drive, I saw two civilians, maybe 100 meters up the road on the right shoulder. They were crouched over something, but it was hard to tell what it was in the low light at the time. We started pulling to the left side of the road, giving them a wide berth. As we closed the distance, they stood and just charged out into the road directly at us. It wasn't even like they were trying to cross the road. They just seemed like they just ran head-on into our convoy. I could hear the metallic thud from the rear vehicle. The head of the convoy didn't have much time to brake. It had to have hit them at least 30 miles an hour, maybe more. When I called it in, I expected the mission to be called. That was the logical response. Two civilians down, one still moving, a street that would wake up fast once word spread. But when I saw them moving, really moving, not the involuntary twitching you sometimes see, I knew something was off. The way the one was just crawling didn't make sense. The injuries should have kept them down. Command came back fast, continue to objective. We didn't think twice. The order was clear and we were exposed. Staying put meant drawing a crowd, and crowds in Mosul could turn hostile without warning. By the time we reached the compound, we'd nearly turned around. The gate had stayed shut longer than expected, leaving us sitting exposed on that street. With the locals beginning to wake, it wasn't a position any of us wanted to be in. When the gate finally did roll open, we had the last Humvee wedge itself between the gate and the frame to prevent anyone from sealing us in. Four guards met us in the courtyard, and they looked like regular army by their uniform. Our interpreter was the first to step forward and exchange a few words with the nearest guard. The conversation was brief, and the guard gestured toward the main building, a two-story structure with sandbags stacked along the lower windows. The interpreter turned back to us. "They'll take you to the colonel's office, inside," he said. One of the guards held up a hand and said something loudly. The interpreter listened and then translated. "No weapons inside the building." But there was no way we were going to do that. He just looked at the guard and then at the rest of us. Nobody moved to unsling their weapon. The guard repeated himself louder this time, but he didn't step forward. He didn't reach for his own weapon either. Our squad leader shook his head once. "Not happening," he said. The interpreter relayed that. The guard hesitated, glanced once at one of his men, and then stepped aside. We left two rangers with the Humvees to pull security and maintain comms with TOC. The rest of us, including Bracken and our translator, followed the guard towards the main entrance. The interior was dim, lit only by narrow windows and a few bare bulbs. The walls were concrete and the floors were tile. It smelled like dust and tobacco, and we moved through the short hallway past a few empty rooms with folding chairs and radios on crates. Bracken walked ahead of me. He didn't look nervous. If anything, he looked comfortable in his element. The guard led us up a short staircase to a larger room on the second floor. Inside, Colonel Karim Al-Assad sat behind a massive wooden desk that looked out of place in an otherwise Spartan room. Maps were pinned to the wall behind him. The man himself was maybe 38, a full beard, wearing a press uniform with a rank insignia clearly visible. He didn't stand when we entered. Bracken had sized up the colonel the moment he saw him still seated. He didn't wait for an invitation. He just walked straight up to the desk and waved for the interpreter to follow. The rest of us fanned out along the walls. I moved towards the window on the left side of the room. From there, I had a clean line of sight into the courtyard below. I could see our two rangers still posted near the Humvees. The guards we'd passed on the way in had returned to their positions near the gate. Al-Hassad finally gave a curt nod. The interpreter relayed introductions, including Bracken's name and his role as liaison. Then he gestured towards a small table near the wall, where a brass coffee pot sat on a tray with several small cups. The interpreter translated, "The colonel offers coffee." Bracken didn't hesitate. "Tell him I accept with gratitude." It was the right move. Refusing would have been an insult, and we couldn't afford that. One of the guards poured the coffee and brought it over. Bracken took the cup and waited for Al-Assad to lift his own, and then drank. It was impossible not to notice how much the colonel was sweating. His forehead glistened under the bulb overhead, and dark patches spread beneath his arms. Bracken set his cup down and leaned forward slightly. "Colonel," he said, not waiting for the interpreter, "I'm not here to sell you on this war. You know what's coming, and so do I." Al-Assad's expression didn't change, but his eyes stayed on Bracken. "The coalition is moving south in force," Bracken continued. "Armor, infantry, air support. We'll be in Baghdad inside a month. That's not negotiable." The interpreter relayed it. Al-Assad's jaw tightened and nodded once. He knew. Bracken paused, letting that sink in, and then shifted tone. "What you can control is how it happens in your sector, your men, your roads, your city." He gestured toward the maps on the wall behind Al-Assad. "You hold the northern corridor, two crossings, supply routes, garrison positions. If your forces dig in, we'll have to neutralize them, house by house if we have to. That means civilian casualties, infrastructure destroyed, your men dead or captured." Paul Assad wiped his forehead with the back of his hand while wincing slightly. He said something in Arabic, and the interpreter translated. He says his orders are to defend. Bracken didn't budge. Orders from Baghdad won't matter when the regime collapses, and it will collapse, Colonel. The question is whether you're still standing when it does. The Colonel was likely expecting all of this. He'd agreed to the meeting, after all. Bracken's pitch wasn't a surprise. It was the opening bid in a negotiation Al-Assad had already decided to entertain. What we were all waiting for was what he wanted in return. Al-Assad spoke again, longer this time. His voice stayed level, but his hands trembled slightly when he reached for his coffee. The interpreter translated. He says there is another problem. Bracken's posture didn't change, but I saw his eyes sharpen. What's the problem? Al-Assad gestured toward the window and then said something longer. The interpreter hesitated and spoke. He says something is happening in the city.
You got an estimate on crowd size?
Hard to tell. Looks like 20, maybe 30 right now. They're moving strange, like scattered groups converging on something. There's no banners, no chanting. Doesn't look like a protest.
Copy, do you see any uniformed presence?
It looks like civilians only, but it's spreading fast. I'm seeing people running toward the crowd, not away from it.
Understood. Keep eyes on and maintain altitude. 1-1 still inside the compound.
I just saw one individual get taken down in the street. The crowd's piling in on us. Hard to tell if it's fighting or... Fuck, they're tearing into each other down there. Multiple individuals down now. I can't tell what's happening. I don't know. No weapons visible.
Copy, Havoc. Maintain altitude and keep eyes on that crowd. 1-1, this is Red TOC. Can we get a sit rep on that meeting? Over.
Red TOC 1-1, still waiting outside. I can't see shit inside the compound from our position. Over.
Copy that. Prepare for immediate exo. You have some concerning crowd movement 3 clicks from your position.
Al-Assad didn't elaborate immediately. Instead, he leaned back and seemed to stare into space for a few moments. When he finally spoke, the interpreter translated in fragments. The colonel says, He requires guarantees for himself and for his family. Bracken pinched the bridge of his nose briefly. He wants extraction to the United States, the interpreter continued. Immediate relocation, and his son, Al-Assad gestured toward a framed photograph on the desk. His son needs medical treatment, now, not later. Bracken then folded his arms. I need to know what we're dealing with first, Colonel. You said there is a problem in the city. What's the problem? Al-Assad's jaw twitched, and he said something while looking away towards a nearby door. The interpreter hesitated. He says the problem is why his son needs treatment, why his men are falling ill, why the streets are not safe. Bracken leaned forward. And tell me what it is. Al-Assad stared at him for a long moment and then began to sit up from his chair. He stood and walked towards the door he'd been staring at. When his hand reached for the handle, we all raised our rifles at once. "Stand down," Bracken commanded, despite having no authority to do so. Nobody lowered their weapons immediately. Al-Assad's guards shifted near the entrance behind us. I could feel the tension spike. "I said stand down," Bracken said again. Our muzzles finally dropped. Al-Assad didn't react to any of it. He pulled the door open and gestured for us to follow. Bracken moved first. The interpreter stayed close behind him. Our squad leader glanced at me and then nodded once, and we followed. Al-Assad crossed the room inside the door in four long strides and stopped at the second door. He didn't open it right away. Instead, he turned back to face us and didn't say anything. The interpreter turned to us as if he was going to translate the colonel's expression, but said nothing. Al-Assad turned back to the door and pushed it open. Inside was what looked like an industrial refrigerator. The colonel commanded for one of his guards to open it. The guard pulled with great effort until the door drudged open. Inside, we could see a man tied to the interior wall. He had heavy restraints securing his hands, legs, neck, and torso. Despite that, he thrashed against them with enough force that made the metal brackets groan. Foam poured from his mouth. His eyes were almost pure red. His left hand was gone. Not bandaged, just gone. The stump looked ragged, like it had been torn off. The man didn't scream. He made a guttural sound, something between a growl and a wet cough. His head snapped towards us when the door opened, and he lunged forward as far as the restraints would allow. I raised my rifle without thinking. So did the ranger next to me. "Jesus Christ," someone muttered behind me. Bracken didn't move. He just stared at the man for several seconds and then turned to Al-Assad. "What is this?" Al-Assad said something in Arabic. The interpreter's voice came out quieter and less confident than before. "This is a demon." Al-Assad turned toward Bracken and spoke again. The interpreter translated. The colonel asks, Is it curable? For the first time since I'd met him, Bracken looked rattled. He'd almost laughed. He didn't answer immediately. Instead, he stared at the thing in the refrigerator, the man, or whatever he was now, then back at Al-Assad. "What the fuck is this?" Al-Assad wiped his forehead again and spoke in longer sentences. The interpreter tried to keep pace. "3 days. It has been happening for 3 days. First one man, then two more. Now there are more than 20. The colonel gestured towards the restrained figure. "We locked them in basements, warehouses, anywhere we could. But more keep appearing." Bracken stepped closer to the refrigerator door, but didn't go inside. "Where are they coming from?" Al-Assad looked at him. "The streets, the market, the homes." His voice didn't waver, but his hands trembled when he gestured toward the window. "They attack without warning. Bite, claw, they do not stop until they are strained or killed." "You said 20, Bracken said. "Where are the rest?" Al-Assad's expression darkened. The interpreter hesitated before translating. He says they cannot burn them fast enough." Al-Assad turned back to Bracken and asked again. The interpreter said, "Is it curable?" Bracken looked at the interpreter like he wanted to ask him why the man even bothered repeating the question. He didn't answer. Instead, he shifted his focus back to the colonel. "Does the regime know about this?" Al-Assad nodded once and spoke briefly. "Yes, they have seen similar things in Baghdad. Gunfire cracked somewhere outside, not close, maybe 3 blocks south, but unmistakable." Bracken's head snapped towards the window, and so did mine. More shots, longer this time. Time to go, Bracken said. He didn't wait for confirmation. He turned toward the door and started moving. Al-Assad shouted something behind us. The interpreter didn't translate right away. The colonel kept shouting, his voice rising, desperate now. What about my son? The interpreter finally called out. What about my son? Bracken stopped and turned in the doorway. I cannot help a demon.
Red COC Havoc. That crowd has multiplied. I'm seeing well over 100 now. They're spilling out of side streets and closing on 1-1's grid. 2 blocks out, moving fast.
Copy, Havoc, confirm. Is the crowd still unarmed?
Affirm on weapons, but they're moving fast. I've got individuals slamming into walls and cars at full speed. Some are climbing over each other, literally stepping on bodies to push forward. I've got a civilian sedan pushing into the crowd from the west side. He's just trying to run people over to get through this crowd. They're swarming the vehicle. They're climbing onto the hood, the roof, pounding on it. This is wrong. Something is very wrong.
Copy all. Havoc, standby. All stations red, TOC. 1-1 needs to exfil immediately. Repeat, 1-1 is to break contact and return to the Humpies. ROE still apply.
We hit the courtyard at a dead sprint. The two rangers we'd left at the Humvees had their rifles raised, muzzles tracking something beyond the gate. One of them fired, 3 controlled bursts that cracked sharp in the enclosed space. ROE still apply, Bracken shouted, but his voice barely cut through the chaos. Neither ranger responded and kept their weapons trained down the street. I couldn't see what they were shooting at yet, but I could hear it. A low, guttural noise rising from the street outside. Mount up, our squad leader barked. We piled into the Humvees. I yanked the rear door closed and threw myself inside as the engine roared to life. The gate was still wedged open by our 3rd vehicle, and through the gap I could see movement. Bodies, dozens of them, pouring into the street. A sea of red eyes. Our lead Humvee lurched forward and swung hard left down a side alley. We followed. The alley spilled into a wider avenue, and that's when I saw them. A mass of people, hundreds moving towards us. Some had visible injuries. One man's arm hung at an impossible angle, a bone jutting through his skin. But he kept running. Turn around, someone shouted from the front seat. The driver cranked the wheel. Tires spun in the dirt road for a moment before they caught and reversed, and then pivoted back towards the compound. Our squad leader grabbed the radio handset.
Havoc 1-1, we need a route out of this city now. Streets are compromised.
Copy 1-1, standby. The open corridor I've got is 4 blocks east. Everything else is gridlocked or closing.
Four blocks east. Guide us.
Roger, first right in 50 meters. Move now. I've got a crowd pushing up from the south.
Turning. Street looks clear so far.
Hold, I got movement ahead. East side. Multiple individuals coming out between those structures.
Visual. Shit, crowd forming fast. They're sprinting toward the avenue. Havoc, we need a new route. Street is blocked. I repeat, street is blocked.
Negative on alternate. That's the only corridor. Wait one, let me check again.
Negative. We are out of time here.
Oh, fuck this.
Egress east.
Copy TOC, we're rolling.